World Corrupt is brought to you by Tommy John. Raj, these are the waning days of November. Just enough time for me to give one more Fall is Chaos in Your Pants lecture to you. You're overheating one second. You're freezing your boys the next. To be ready for anything, you need underwear that can handle everything. It's time for Tommy John underwear.
I can now attest to this personally from personal experience because, well, I've been wearing them during every U.S. men's national team game this tournament. I've soiled at least 3 pairs a game.
When you're wearing Tommy John underwear, you are that much more comfortable, so you can do everything better, including soiling yourself. Name a problem without underwear, and Tommy John has solved it.
Well, my problem was that before Tommy John, I wasn't wearing any. Am I sharing too much?
No. There you go. Problem solved. Tommy John's a breathable, lightweight fabric has 4 times the stretch of competing brands. They come with a no wedgie guarantee, thanks to a non-rolling waistband and legs that never ride up. Plus, they feature a horizontal quick draw fly with over 18 million pairs sold. People love Tommy John underwear. That's why Tommy John doesn't have customers. They have fanatics. Plus, everything's backed with Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear or its free guarantee. Go to TommyJohn.com/world. Go right now for 20% off your first order. 20% off at TommyJohn.com/world. TommyJohn.com/world. See site for details.
Today I feel gay. Today I feel disabled. Today I feel... a migrant worker.
One person has the courage to step forward, throw a punch back, someone else follows. Like, it could get real ugly for Gianni Infantino real fast.
But I feel like we're in a Cold War stage of everything that's about to go down, and I've got a feeling it's about to escalate.
Welcome back to World Corrupt. This is episode 6. Raj, this thing's happening, buddy.
Oh, I don't know what this thing is, but is it ever happening, Thomas? It's all bloody happening. I've said this on Men in Blazers as we podcasted daily, but as we tape this, we are currently on day 4 of the World Cup, and yet I feel like Tom Hanks about an hour and a half into Castaway, but if only I look that good still.
Fear not, my friend. I am here to be your Wilson on this very special episode of our Crooked Media and Men in Blazers mashup.
A mashup that goes together like, well, oh, FIFA and corruption, Gianni Infantino and ill-advised uses of the first person, an American victory over England. It's coming.
It's coming, I hope. Rod, you've never sounded more like Kenny Powers. But before we dive in, if this is your first time listening to World Corrupt, welcome. We are thrilled to have you. But we would love to advise you to go back to the beginning of our audio, El Camino de Santiago, and make sure you listen to the first 5 episodes.
Can I say, not just welcome, but we are bloody thrilled at the response to this thing. When you make a podcast that is as curious and as bloody hard and as complicated, and I mean, emotionally complicated for Tommy, because he has to work with me, which is intrinsically emotionally complicated. But it's been amazing. Your responses, your ideas, your thoughts, your suggestions, your challenges. And if you do go back to the first 5 episodes, we do try and unpack exactly what a FIFA is and how that thing, the FIFA, goes so utterly bloody corrupt.
Ooh, so corrupt. We also spoke with some amazing, brave, brilliant human rights activists and experts about the situation faced by migrant workers in Qatar. It reported 6,500 of whom have died since this tournament was awarded back in 2010.
We talked with footballers about the courage it takes to speak out against injustice, to use their platforms for a force of good when the system in which you're playing, as we'll discuss, all that can tell you is you just shut up and dribble. Yep.
Yeah, that's right. And then ultimately, we wanted to figure out what we could do, what us, you know, as fans, as listeners, as sports fanatics can do to ensure that a global sporting event like this never winds up in a place like Qatar again. But Raj, you mentioned it up top, and I just wanted to go back to it briefly. What have you been up to, man? This is like your presidential election for me, your Super Bowl every day, 4 times a day. Like, have you slept yet?
Yeah, I didn't realise how much of a human wreck I am. The World Cup is like, it's four games a day, which is unusual for this World Cup, and it does entail getting up at 4 a.m. every morning. Just going, I didn't realise how much of a wreck I was till your face popped up for the first time in a couple of weeks since I've seen you on this kind of Zoom thing, and I almost started crying. It was just so overly emotional to see your face. And a World Cup is what you said. I do imagine it's probably like a month away from an election. When the schedule's so compressed. And this, the thing that's weird about this is there's the football, which is just relentless, but there's also the geopolitics of it all. You have to watch both through a split screen, which means covering it is like a spigot. It's an out of control, autocratically tinged spigot. We're playing show. We're going across America, doing live shows from sea to shining sea. We're recording so many bloody podcasts. I mean, too many podcasts, probably. We're doing live game Twitches this Friday, England, USA,
nice.
with Matthew McConaughey. And I'm not going to lie, it feels physically and mentally like I feel like, God, surely we've reached the semi-finals. But my wife left this morning. She went away with the kids for Thanksgiving. The worst part for me was when the dog sitter came to pick up my dog. That really broke me. And I now, Tommy, I now feel like I'm just married to the World Cup.
I'm sorry, buddy. Well, listen, I think like as a fan, as a listener, we're all grateful to you and the Men in Blazers team for bringing this whole thing home for us. I feel like you're midwifing the World Cup to the nation right now, and we love you for it.
And sleep, I keep telling myself, sleep is for January, Tommy. And the reason I said, I'm so happy to see you both because it's you, Tommy, a force of joy in my life. But so much has happened since we did speak, some of which we hope would happen, a lot of which we could never have predicted. There's been moments, I should say, of true poetic wonder. And there's been thumping bass notes of human darkness, relentless bass notes. And it's happening, Tommy. This World Cup in Qatar, that this surreal, soulless World Cup, it is happening. And there are, I should say before we get into this, there have been fleeting moments of global connectivity that do make your heart sing and make me, even someone who does believe he's dead inside, does make me briefly, fleetingly feel alive. But we need to break down so much of the complex crap that has occurred. And I've honestly ached to be with you and tape this, so let's do it.
All right, buddy. Well, so one thing, like you said earlier, I'm really proud of is that people are really paying attention and they care about the human rights considerations that we're talking about. And this podcast that we've been doing has traveled very far. I literally did an Australian radio interview an hour ago. I did not think that was going to happen in this context. But also, Raj, apparently we got under the Qatari government's skin and on their radar screen, which I'll consider a small measure of success, but I don't love it. It's a touch unnerving.
Yeah, I've really got such a joyous text from you, Tommy. Qatar, clap back at us. You're kind of in your element.
Yeah, I am. I'm kind of a shit talker, though. These guys play for keeps. So the backstory, just real quick, is Raj and I wrote this op-ed for CNN about all the reasons why the 2022 World Cup is a mess. I won't summarize that here. You guys have listened to the series. Qatar's ambassador to the United States penned a response to us. In it, he said things like the World Cup is a chance to, quote, alleviate misconceptions and prejudice not only against Qatar, but about Arab and Muslim culture as a whole, end quote. Said there have been numerous misleading public campaigns attempting to disparage this World Cup. The op-ed generally bristled at critics, said that Qatar was facing criticism that was unfair, that singled them out in ways that other host countries have not been singled out. Basically, Raj, it was defensive, it was whataboutism, and it suggested that criticism of Qatar, critics of Qatar like us, are essentially biased or racist towards Arab people or Muslims. And so, listen, my response to that is I'm sick of these snowflake liberal autocrats, buddy, you know? Unbelievable. Talk about like ducking the whole issue.
Yeah, it was an op-ed that kind of just fizzled. There's a national anthem which I love in the World Cup, the Japanese national anthem. It's just so harmonious and soothing. but it also just seems to stop in the middle out of nowhere. And that op-ed, it just kind of began and then ended without actually making the point. And I got a text from Tommy telling me, buddy, maybe you should start two-factor authenticating all your accounts, which is exactly what I needed to have in my life, Tommy.
Yeah, the timing is not my strong suit. There was a British investigation, however, that found that hackers targeted critics of the World Cup and had been doing so since 2019. There were over 100 targets, Michel Platini included.
I can imagine someone that is somewhere is flicking through my photographs of my recent holiday at the Jersey Shore as we speak, and God bless them, you're welcome to them.
Yeah, you're going to find a lot of dog photos on my phone. One of the more surprising stories, news stories from the past few weeks, though, Raj, is that disgraced former FIFA president Sepp Blatter has found religion and now says that giving Qatar the World Cup was a mistake. I guess the road to Damascus goes through Doha, Raj. Too little too late, my man. However, I did not notice that Sepp included, he didn't mention human rights as part of the problem. Here's the quote I saw about Qatar. Quote, "It's too small of a country. Football and the World Cup are too big for it." Blatter goes on to say that it should have gone Russia 2018, the United States 2022 to bring together, you know, historic rivals from the Cold War. Boy, Sepp, if only there had been a way to know how big or small Qatar was before the ceremony. Very impressive stuff here. Yeah. What did you make of this confessional?
Yeah, I'm just finding my mind when you said Sepp Blatter has found religion. I was like trying to work out what religion must that actually be, and is it Satanism? I mean, the Sepp Blatter moment, what did I feel about that? I probably feel about that the same as you do when you watch like Bill Barr or John Kelly have a belated moment that feels like a sudden burst of lucidity about the past couple of years, but you can't help but scream out loud. And Sepp Blatter gave this interview to a Swiss newspaper. Why did this come so many years too late? And you kind of feel it must just be about legacy burnishing or an attempt to inject quotes into the public record for reasons of historical legacy. But you also kind of like, why now? And as you say, not 12 years ago, Sepp Blatter, when you had agency, more than agency, when you had leadership, when you had responsibility. And look, I did find this detail fascinating when he also took pains to say that he wanted to validate the story about that meeting at the French presidential palace a week before the December 2010 vote, where the Qatari crown prince, now the emir, sat with Michel Platini, the French representative to FIFA, and the French president, Sarkozy, and they discussed changing the French vote. And in a completely separate, unconnected conversation, talked about Qatar buying fighter jets from the French worth $14.6 billion. And you think you got a sense of exactly how this was done, not just with bribery and manila envelopes filled with cash, but bribery at an epic geopolitical scale. But it was painful. I mean, why do men, and it is always men, why do they years later give these suddenly candid, complete U-turn interviews in your realm?
It did seem like Sepp, deep down, is mostly angry that the new FIFA president, Gianni Infantino, doesn't call him or isn't nice to him. It did seem like there was just a lot of bitterness there, and he was excited to rain on his parade right before the big event.
Yeah, I mean, that was exactly what the hack job was time to do. And it was hard for me to hear that interview with the same lips that said shortly after Qatar was very... Sepp Blatter was a man who very quickly gave a press conference where he said, Qatar will be the host and nothing about this award can be revoked. He was that man. And you don't get a do-over on this kind of thing. The Qatar World Cup was happening. And as you said, this went down right before the opening ceremony. And Tommy, that opening ceremony, it was like a fever dream. Took place, I should note, only after celebrity announced that they'd refused to take part, from Shakira to Dua Lipa to Rod Stewart. And when I read that list, I was like, oh my God, that opening ceremony production team, they cast a wide net there, taste-wise,
they really
Tommy.
They really did.
Well, Shakira won't do it. Who's next on our list? Stewart. Is Rod Stewart? Can we exhume Rod Stewart? All of them were like, nope, not doing this. And By the way, this ceremony, which remember, 100 days before kickoff, Qatar actually moved the opening ceremony by 24 hours so the Emir could actually have some fireworks.
And so crazy.
This thing was going to happen. And so we wondered, we tuned in aghast and we're like, who would perform? Who would be the main attraction? And Thomas, who did perform? It was Freeman! It was Morgan bloody Freeman! They got the guy who played Nelson Mandela!
When we had a 7-minute running joke about Morgan Freeman, I thought to myself, this might be overkill. And then all of a sudden, nope, delivered for us here.
Yeah, we're this is the current affairs show, Tommy. We know what we're doing here. We got our finger on the pulse of geopolitical culture. Morgan Freeman walked out in Qatar before the eyes of the world, told the crowd, we gather here as one big tribe and Earth is the tent we all live in. I mean, what? Chaos is a ladder. I don't know, but he delivered it in the way only Morgan Freeman can. And as you know, dear listeners, from episode 2 of World Corrupt, Morgan Freeman was the face of the failed United States bid to host this very 2022 World Cup. You remember, he was the man who dropped his script in the middle of his presentation for the United States, completely lost his place. And here's my question for you, Thomas. Was hiring him, unleashing the Freeman, unleash the gimp, was hiring him, was it just next level geopolitical trolling by Qatar? Not only did we win the bid you wanted, but we took Freeman from your cold, dead hands too. The Shawshank Redemption works for us now.
That is brilliant and conniving and evil, and I almost have to respect it. I had not thought of that. That's really good. Good for them. Good for the Emir.
Yeah, I mean, I did think about that as a possibility, and I realized that if there was a possibility, Bill Clinton probably would have walked out for the opening ceremony too.
I mean, he was too busy getting crypto in the Bahamas or doing whatever he's been doing.
Yeah, God bless. But hear me out here. What I realized, if I was a betting man, I think they may have played the long, long game on this one, Thomas. Maybe Freeman was always on their payroll, and that's why he dropped the script in the first place.
Double agent. Yeah, God damn it. Freeman, you crafty bastard. I mean, he's an actor. Of course he could pull it off.
Wheels have been wheels. And I got to say, and we should discuss this for one moment, the opening ceremony was even more eerie because Fox, the broadcaster, the rights holder, have made the slightly controversial decision, which they announced before the tournament, to focus purely on the issues on the field of play. They announced that they wouldn't address anything other than football, because, well, Fox, and really, it turns out they are sponsored by Qatar Airways, who actually paid for the Fox set to be in Doha instead of Los Angeles. So like, compare that to NBC, when they covered the Beijing Olympics, their outside analyst was a Yale professor of East Asian studies, and Fox's expert was Mr. Q, a social influencer who happens to be the founder of the website I Love Qatar. And it's... yes. Yeah. Tommy, this is funny, but it's really complicated.
It's dark.
We're watching Lalas, Alexi Lalas, go do a lot of dune buggying in the desert, telling everyone they should come to Qatar. We have a lot of Qatar Tourist Board infomercials. I mean, when this opening ceremony finished, the Fox host shouted, "Oh, if that wasn't an opening ceremony that will be remembered for generations, that was amazing." This is complicated, Tommy. That veers towards like how North Korea covers events, isn't it?
Yeah, that's troubling. I mean, listen, I remember the 2008 Beijing Olympics opening ceremony, which was extraordinary and I think was something that was seen all around the world and rewatched and watched again because of the intricacy and how impressive it was to pull it off. But that was because they practiced really hard, not because they paid off an influencer to come do the commentary. I mean, that's a black eye for our friends over at Fox. I hate to say it.
Maybe we'll get Mr. Q on episode 7 of World Corrupt. Always welcome. But you compare that, by the way, to the BBC. Who broadcast the opening day's proceedings in Britain. And they did it like this. They decided not to show the actual opening ceremony. Instead, they had their broadcaster, Gary Lineker, who, think of him as kind of like English Tony Romo, former footballing legend turned quasi-national institution, and he greeted the nation.
Ever since FIFA chose Qatar back in 2010, the smallest nation to have hosted football's greatest competition has faced some big questions. From accusations of corruption in the bidding process to the treatment of migrant workers who built the stadiums, where many lost their lives. Homosexuality is illegal here. Women's rights and freedom of expression are in the spotlight. Also, the decision 6 years ago to switch the World Cup from summer to winter. Against that backdrop, there's a tournament to be played, one that will be watched and enjoyed around the world. Stick to football, say FIFA. Well, we will, for a couple of minutes at least.
And then led a panel discussion of them. I actually posted the introduction on Twitter. They've now got a couple of million views. And Tommy, that when I heard it, when I saw it, when I watched it, I was like, my God, that's how this World Cup should be contextualized.
I mean, it was a sober, concise, to the point summary of all the challenges with this World Cup. They didn't hide. They didn't gloss over it with happy talk and silly, you know, banal chit chat. They got right into it, and, you know, credit to the BBC.
This is an opening ceremony that will be remembered for generations. Another aspect of the opening day. Gianni Infantino was everywhere, Tommy.
Man, that guy is everywhere, and he's always acting awful. Before we get into his many antics, and there's too many chapters of the Infantino story here. Yeah. Can you give listeners just a quick 101 about who Gianni Infantino is?
Are you talking about the current president of FIFA, the gentleman
Indeed.
Who succeeded Sepp Blatter back in 2016, another Swiss gent, what are the odds, who looks like he came to FIFA. Essentially, if you've not seen who he is, just shut your eyes and imagine the character that has run Spectre in 7 Bond films over the past 2 decades.
Got it.
He's bald. He emanates a sort of just greasy banality of evil. He's toothy, just needs a cat on the lap and the head back cackle opportunity and e-criming. And he's actually moved his family over to Qatar. This is something Sepp Blatter blurted out in the interview.
Yeah,
why has he moved
that?
His family to Qatar? We don't know. His kids are enrolled in Qatari schools. And even Blatter says this is bloody weird and not normal, that's kind of like, that is in this. That's like Ivan the Terrible being like, yep, Vlad the Impaler, he was bad. And in the run-up to the tournament, your man Gianni Infantino, he had the chutzpah, I think that's a Swiss word, to send a letter to all of the players, all of the athletes coming to the World Cup, in which he said, we know football doesn't live in a vacuum. We're equally aware there are many challenges and difficulties of a political nature all around the world. But please, do not allow football to be dragged into every ideological or political battle that exists, i.e. stick to football, which was really a stunning moment. I'd say not well received from the players I've spoken to. But this is an organization, listeners, FIFA, which has spent much of the last 20 years boasting how football can change the world. If you just pause the podcast, Google FIFA football change world, and you will just get hilarious. Just like, I mean, essentially, you'd think it was Nelson Mandela, FIFA, because FIFA has thought it's Nelson Mandela. And then he followed this up almost immediately by going to sit down. I can't even understand this. I was so excited to speak to you, someone who will understand this. He then sat down with the G20 and demanded a ceasefire between Ukraine and Russia.
Yeah, so I agree with your take on the letter. It seemed to lay out his cowardice in black and white and then piss off everyone who received it and piss off all the human rights groups. So I'm not sure that was a big win for Gianni.
That may have been it. That may have been Johnny's aim. Let's be
careful.
All the things you've named. You've just suddenly made sense to me of this thing for the first time. But why would the G20 have that bloke address him in the first place?
Yeah, so Gianni Infantino goes to the G20, which is a meeting of the world's largest economies. They gather together. They work on major issues. This year, I think the focus was Ukraine. And while there, Gianni Infantino, he addressed these world leaders and he made this impassioned plea for a ceasefire between Russia and Ukraine during the World Cup. And here's a quote to your point earlier, Raj. He said, quote, football is a force for good. We are not naive to believe that football can solve the world's problems. We know that our main focus as a sports organization is and should be sports. But because football unites the world, this particular FIFA World Cup with 5 billion people watching it can be a trigger for a positive gesture, for a sign or a message of hope, end quote. Raj, he's so close to getting it. He's so close to getting it. Why does Gianni get to go to the G20 and talk about politics and the players can't wear an armband?
Well, I think maybe to defend Gianni, I'm not sure if this is the right day. I think he went on a Tuesday, and Tuesday is the day of the week when football can be about change. He wrote the letter on a Thursday in defense of him. But like, why would the G20 have him? Like, this is a national geopolitical operation, and why they'd let the football guy in who has no interest in change or any of this stuff was befuddling. Also befuddling, if we're going to be candid, Infantino became very close with Vladimir Putin during the 2018 World Cup, which was hosted across Russia.
Yes, he did.
He received the Medal of Freedom from Vladimir Putin after boasting that football had showed a face of Russia to the world that was really rather wonderful. And even with everything that has occurred over the past year of the most sordid and grotesque nature, he has refused under repeat demands from the media to return that Medal of Freedom. So the whole thing was contorted and dark to the World Cup jump cut from G20 opening ceremony. Gianni Infantino, Tommy, sitting between the Emir of Qatar. And do you know who sat on his left-hand side?
Mohammed bin Salman, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia. What a good time.
What are the odds?
Yeah, no, the odds are very low.
I'm not so good at lip reading, but I'm pretty sure Infantino had MBS turn to him at one point and say, oh my God, this is Morgan Freeman's worst performance since Evan Almighty. But when you see that image, what do you see?
I mean, I see two brutal, corrupt autocrats making an Infantino sandwich. And it's worth pointing out that, you know, we can dig into this more later, but the Qataris and the Saudis have not gotten along historically. We talked about this in an earlier episode, but the Saudi government actually led essentially a diplomatic boycott of Qatar for several years that only ended in 2021. It's a blockade. They literally, remember, Qatar is a tiny little peninsula the size of Connecticut that hangs off of Saudi Arabia. The Saudis closed the only land border into the place, right? So it was that level of aggression. And then all of a sudden, they're thick as thieves surrounding, making an Infantino sandwich. It was a very, very strange thing. I think a lot of people's eyebrows perked up in sort of the foreign policy nerd world. And let me tell you, they got some eyebrows.
You just said this word we have to go back to, the Infantino sandwich. But then Gianni, on the opening day of the World Cup, I mean, we thought that was the worst, seeing him there between those two, proceeded to give a 57-minute speech. I'm so excited to speak to you as someone that used to work in political comms. I can only describe this as a layman who knows nothing about how the world works, yep, as a violent explosion of verbal diarrhea.
Today I feel Qatari. Today I feel Arab. Today I feel African. Today I feel gay. Today I feel disabled. Today I feel a migrant worker.
Tommy, you understand speech writing for global leaders. His speech, today I feel Qatari, today I feel Arab, today I feel African, today I feel gay, today I feel disabled, today I feel a migrant worker. I mean, all said, by the way, in front of a stunned audience of journalists, a masterclass of whataboutism, a black belt in whataboutism, unhinged to me, the average layman. But Tommy, you understand what was really going on. Tell us, what was this?
Raj, it reminded me of the scene in the film Billy Madison, where he says, at no point in this incoherent, rambling speech was Gianni close to anything resembling a rational thought, and we are all dumber for having listened to it. I mean, as you said, today I feel Qatari, I feel Arab, I feel African, I feel gay. You're none of those things, buddy. You have no idea how those people feel. My takeaway from this whole thing, Raj, and this is the only way I can make sense of this 57-minute rant, which credit to everyone in the media, by the way, for calling it what it was. The reaction was universal and brutal. My takeaway from that speech was Gianni Infantino's goal is to show to his trillionaire Gulf Arab sponsors, he'll go to the mattresses and he will stay there and he will battle for them. That's the only rational explanation I can think of.
Yeah, and there's one detail. I mean, the Billy Madison thing I love because it's taken me to a happy place. But to get back to the darkest of human places, let's get back to staring into the abyss together, Thomas. There was a rationale here. This was not an insane rambling. It's been written about as if it was that weird moment when a global leader who sat with G20 global leaders tried to reveal an empathetic side from his formative victimhood as a pre-ball ginger with freckles and could try to parallel that to the suffering of workers who toiled to the point of death in 120-degree heat to build his tournament for World Cup readiness. And the reality is there is a rationale here, and that rationale is a number, and it's $7.5 billion. That's the number. That's a number that FIFA are projecting to glean, to harvest off this event. So when you saw that, was any part of you like, this is a gentleman who is, yeah, I love your thing, we're going to go to the mattresses, we're going to stand up, we're going to draw fire from our host, Qatar, who's freaking out a little bit with the scrutiny, with the criticism, with the incoming. I mean, people were comparing this to the Fire Festival, to Ja Rule would organise a better World Cup. I mean, that probably, Ja Rule stuff hurts. I mean, the other stuff, sticks and stones will break my bones, but Ja Rule will really hurt me.
It sure
and
will, yeah.
You're making $7.5 billion. Was he just speaking to an audience of one there, essentially, the Emir of Qatar?
I think he was, and also I think to Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, and we can dig into that more later. But I also saw a man, Raj, who thinks he is unstoppable.
Amnesty International immediately criticized Infantino of dismissing human rights criticisms, treating demands for equality as part of a culture war, which was really his effort. And I watched it and I was like, it's funny to watch him. It's deeply sad to watch him. Ultimately, right now, this speech reminded us FIFA's there to serve the needs of Qatar, to make money for itself, lots of money for its leaders.
What are you going to do? Gianni Infantino's he's ruling with impunity here. He's gonna hire Jared Fogle to sell the Gianni sandwich next. So, okay, armbands, Raj. He's a Subway guy. He's nice.
That's so funny you mention that, because in my head when we were doing that segment I kept thinking of Jared Fogle, but even I managed to suck the Jared Fogle comment back in. You went there.
Hey, listen, I live there. Raj, I know you're on the road, on the pod, on the stage,
pretty much everywhere at
this point covering the World Cup. Can I give you a little diet hack?
Keep the air conditioning on, even in winter, to help combat the meat sweats.
That's a good one. But I want to tell you about a product I use literally every day. It's called AG1. I've been taking it for years. I love it. It doesn't taste super healthy. It's got a kind of a mild tropical taste that I actually look forward to each morning.
Oh, sounds perfect for chasing down some Prince's hot chicken, extra, extra, extra hot, while I'm in Nashville.
Perfect for chasing down any hot prince. You hear that, Harry? It's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with a convenient daily nutrition. One scoop in a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/corrupt. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/corrupt to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Do you think AG1 is Merrick Garland's personalized license plate? Tommy, is it time for us to pivot into armbands?
Yeah, I do think, look, there's no World Corrupt episode that's complete without a armband discussion, a sartorial section.
By the way, it was a name that when we were trying to work out what to call it, I originally wanted to call the podcast Pod Save Football. which is actually true. Ultimately, this is what we're discussing. Please save the soul of the game. Tommy wanted to call it Today in Armbands.
Today in Armbands. Armbands Today is actually what I want to call it. No. So I think as we discussed in a previous episode, Raj, 8 European national teams had planned on having their captains wear these One Love armbands during the matches. They had rainbows on them. They were symbolizing diversity and inclusion. It was kind of like a catch-all feel-good protest message. At least that was the plan until FIFA got involved. And they threatened the teams with an immediate yellow card if these players wore these armbands. So the response, again, was they were condemned for this act. The Secretary of State, Tony Blinken, he's a friend of mine, who was visiting Qatar. He was there for the USA match. He had a bunch of meetings with Qatari officials. He was asked about this move, and he actually condemned FIFA. He said no one on a football pitch should be forced to choose between supporting these values and rooting for their team. But it worked, Raj. FIFA bullied these European teams out of wearing these armbands, these kind of, let's be honest, rather innocuous armbands. My question for you is, one, do you think FIFA really would have gone through with yellow carding these guys? And two, can you explain to the newbies out there why getting a yellow card at like the first second of a game would be such a big deal?
Yeah, by the way, hearing you explain it, Tommy, out of your mouth, you realize how insane this is. How did World War III start, Daddy? Oh, it started with like a tiny strip of polyester and the battle of
it makes you realize how weak FIFA is. Like, you can't handle that much, like a strip of bicep criticism. You can't deal with that. Come on.
Bicep criticism. God, that's an amazing concept. I'm not sure if I, as I'm looking at my own, do I even have biceps at this point in the World Cup? Are I that wasted away? Look, it's not about me. It is about this. It's about armbands. It's about the important things in life. And again, cast your mind back where we talked about how England, my nation of birth, I ride with Team America now, but England had talked at great length for months about how deeply they were researching the issues around this World Cup. They told the journalist Miguel Delaney, the English FA, that they wanted to do more than just a T-shirt in terms of protest. And they ended up doing something quite less than a T-shirt. This strip of, the captains all wear this tiny armband to say captain on their arm. They were going to have, and 8 European teams ultimately signed on to this, that they would have their captain's armband be coloured in pride colours and contain the pretty unoffensive slogan, One Love, which when I read about it, I thought, well, that's a gesture. That's a gesture.
Right.
You know, more than anything, it's like as if they had a creative meeting. How do we tick the box of doing something? Not enough to be really offensive or effective. I mean, who could be against One Love, Tommy, in life?
It's a Bob Marley lyric. It's fine. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, One Love. No, sorry. We've got to respect the people who think there's 2 loves. Or maybe 3 loves. So let's think about Hugh Hefner's feelings.
I don't know.
I like the way you're going rather than where I was going. But the reality is, this was a kind of nothing that's become a massive, massive something because they petitioned FIFA. Any outfit you wear, any strip, anything has to be sent to FIFA. They have to sign off on it. They sent this in September. FIFA didn't respond for months until the night before England were due to first take the field when they announced that if the captain wears the armband on the field, he will get an immediate yellow card, a caution. Now, I don't want to get too into the football mumbo jumbo, too into the weeds, but if you get 2 yellow cards in a game, which is quite easy, you'll be sent off the field. You'll be dismissed and your team will have 10 players, which essentially can affect their whole World Cup campaign. But as an individual, if you get a second one, even in the next game, this is World Cup mumbo jumbo, and I apologize, listeners.
I love it.
Then you will be suspended. You will have to sit on the bench. You will not be able to take the field for the third game. In fact, any time in the first 4 games, 2 yellow cards, you'll be suspended. And the captains, you have to remember, are often the best players.
Right,
they don't want to miss a game. So initially, Tommy, they backed down. England crumbled. Netherlands crumbled. FIFA charged in. This is an amazing detail, which I don't want history to forget. They announced all the captains on all the teams will now wear official armbands, which are all about insane slogans gesturing at change. And they want their captains to wear slogans that involve, and I crap you not, Tommy, Share the meal is one that they came up with. share the meal.
It's another sandwich joke? Are you serious?
Maybe it's about an early adopter stage in marketing the Infantino sandwich.
Oh my God.
One of them is football unites the world. Who can be against that? Sure. And then a third one is, this one is particularly Orwellian. Bring the moves. That's what they came out. They had clearly had a creative meeting. I don't know if they just had the interns do these, or this is what MBS Infantino and the Emir were talking about during the first game. Bring the moves. Who can be against bringing the moves in life, Tommy?
Bring the moves? What on earth does that mean? Or is it a dance competition? What are we talking about?
I don't know, but whatever they did, they were trying to turn loaves of bread into a million Infantino sandwiches. And so England wilted, the Netherlands wilted. But today, Tommy, the Germans, they took the field. And I've got to say, the Germans, their football culture in the modern period, they've long had a reputation for being outspoken, stiff-necked in the most wonderful way. Couple of players they have. I actually predicted this ahead of the tournament. Leon Goretzka, a remarkable human being, who has taken time, an elite footballer, plays for German champions, Bayern Munich, taken plenty of time to speak out against the rise of fascism in Germany, racism in football, anti-Nazism. I mean, just an amazing human being. They decided that they would take the field today. They did not wear the armband. Why would they take the armband? They couldn't take the armband. By the way, any autocrat listening about protest in the nation, clearly all you need to do is wave a yellow card in its general direction and you can stifle dissent. But Germany took the field, and for their pre-game photo, which is a ritual, just a boring old ritual of football, they all leant in, they did their formation, two banks of human beings facing a camera, filled with fear at the game that which is to come. And instead, each of the German players put their hand, Tommy, across their mouths to show they were being silenced by FIFA. And at the very second they did, the German national team issued a statement over Twitter saying, denying us the armband is the same as denying us a voice. We stand by our position. And that is where we are. That was a statement which has been perceived as saying these European teams are, you know, they've had them, they first recoiled, but they're going to actually up the stakes. And I was disgusted. I will say, I'm not English, I'm American. But the English team, to back down, was so bloody craven, Tommy. They do have leverage. I mean, they could have all walked on with the armband, right, and said, okay, Qatar, kick us out the tournament.
I do think, though, what we're seeing time after time after time is examples of the organizations involved trying to silence players, silence teams, and in so doing...
Silence fans,
and in so doing, raising more awareness about the underlying problems than they would have if they just let these guys wear the armbands. Same as the Qatari ambassador to the U.S. writing his little op-ed in response to us idiots, Raj. I got 10 times more requests to go on TV and talk about our op-ed after they responded to it than I did before. It's like, when you're an autocrat, when you say everyone doing what you say, when you control the media, you're not always good at kind of the more deft touch elements of winning a PR campaign.
I mean, that is so true. I mean, you do create internal fear. You create a moment where Roger's scrambling to do the two-factor authentication. And I will just say, if anyone's listening from an autocratic government, I think I've done about 30% of my accounts at this point. You just don't know which they are. That's all I've got for you.
His password is Blazers, man.
No, my password's not that. It's FU FIFA. But the,
there you
the,
go.
The 1, 2, 3. But the... this is going on against a backdrop of insanity. And it's a battle of symbols in this moment, Tommy. The, you know, Qatar security every day banning fans from taking any rainbow anything. There's a war over the rainbow. You know, the Welsh fans have the whole World Cup journey, this wonderful nation that have qualified for the World Cup for the first time since 1958. We had Matthew Rees from the Americans come on one of our live shows.
Great.
And he talked about how he doesn't care whether they win or lose. They just want to show the world that Wales exists and is not England.
I call it America's Portland. It's like America's Oregon, right?
Yeah, yeah. Wales for the Britain. Amazing. I love that. He's like, we just want to show the world that Wales is separate to England and the 800 years of oppression that we've had from the English. They can, you know, we want to put up a finger at that. They're joyous. They're wonderful. It's an amazing story that they've had to get into the World Cup, and they're savoring every second. Their fans have for years worn this bucket hat in the colours of the Welsh flag, with a tiny bit of rainbow involved. All those hats from the women in particular were taken by an overzealous security. Someone walking into the stadium with a tiny rainbow on their shirt was. By the way, we had a great tweet from a fan trying to get in with a Men in Blazers scarf that I'd even forgotten we'd released 5 years ago that had the slogan on it: "America, we took out Sepp Blatter. Now we're coming for you." And security, he's like, "Security have got me in a corner of the stadium. They're banning it." And FIFA, by the way, have not issued a statement. They won't answer journalist questions about what they think about security taken away. This is hilarious, but it's not hilarious about rainbow items. This is the battle. German minister Nancy Faeser was at the game today watching Germany play. She sat by Infantino. Infantino probably not going to make a Nancy Faeser sandwich, I'd imagine. She took off her jacket. She's a government minister. She cannot be yellow carded. Took off her jacket, and she was wearing the One Love armband, Tommy.
Good for her.
Yeah, amazing. And Gianni Infantino just spent the next hour staring at his phone as if he was too busy typing away to create another bonkers speech to notice it. And all I can say is sports is always political. We all agree that. You must be agreeing if you're listening to this. This World Cup is the single most political thing I have ever witnessed. And England play again on Friday against the United States. It'll be fascinating to see what they do. They've taken a lot of crap, and I hope they take a lot more from the English public, who've made it clear that by just wilting, by pretending to gesture about freedom, about LGBTQ rights, and then just wilting because of a yellow card, that it makes it seem like LGBTQ rights are not worth fighting for. And that is abominable. By the way, tiny detail again. Sorry to go so deep, dear listeners, but a weird and wonderful thing that happened this morning. The Danish FA president, we love scandos on this show. The Scandinavians are a real pathfinder. We do, don't we? Why are they so great pathfinders?
They're just great.
Scandinavia, God bless you all, listeners. And by the way, we have a ton of listeners in Scandinavia. The Danish FA president said this morning in a press conference that Denmark was, quote, considering leaving FIFA. They were trying to put a block together with Nordic or other European football associations. They didn't want to leave alone. Very quickly, the Danish Federation put out an official statement walking this back. But it seemed like a very political move, a threat, a little, you know, this is where we can, do you want to go here? Where there's smoke, or in this case, smorbrod, there is fire. And I watched that and I was like, Tommy, you know politics. That was either a hint at leverage, real leverage, or there's something cooking that.
I liked it. I mean, the hardest thing in politics is getting someone to jump first. You know what I mean? Like, there's strength in numbers. I'll go to my kind of well of knowledge because that's all I got. Like the 2016 Republican primary. Remember when Trump would just kick the crap out of all his opponents and none of them had the guts to stand up to him? Look what happened. But, you know, if one person has the courage to step forward, throw a punch back, someone else follows, like, it could get real ugly for Gianni Infantino real fast. And if I were him, I might lie in bed at night and think to myself, why do I look unbelievably constipated and uncomfortable next to the German interior minister? But I am like thick as thieves with Mohammed bin Salman, the Saudi crown prince, who ordered the execution of a journalist as recently as 2018. This is a man who is completely out of control. He's been compared to Saddam Hussein by people who know him. Like, hey, Gianni, do some soul searching, bro.
Yeah, you know, I listened to you say that, and I need to defend Gianni here because, Tommy, I look at you. You're a young, you know, good-looking, successful bloke. You were never a ginger with freckles who was bullied by lots of Swiss kids. You don't know his pain. You do not know his pain. The true fixture, the true remarkable moment of the tournament was when Saudi Arabia came back from a goal down against powerhouse, actually tournament favourites, Argentina, who were on a 36-game unbeaten streak and beat them 2-1. This is like, listeners, if you don't know anything about football, like me, I don't know anything about football either. It's like a 16 seed in March Madness knocking off a number one. Think of a UMBC Retrievers clipping Virginia. Or watching the game, I was like, God, I've got to speak to Tommy, because it was incredible to see the Emir of Qatar looking at the game and wrapping a Saudi flag around his neck as if it was a scarf. Tommy, can you explain this to me? Because that was conscious. That was not a football moment. That was not a man getting lost in 90 minutes of transcendent poetry. This was a man saying, I know what I'm doing. I know that the world's eyes are on me. I know that the region's eyes are on me. I was just in an Infantino sandwich, and now I'm going to communicate this. What was being said?
You know, Raj, I mean, I do think that Saudi Arabia is looming large over this entire World Cup. And, you know, part of it is their bid for the 2030 World Cup. We can get into that in a second. Part of it is this that bizarre moment when the Emir of Qatar wrapped the Saudi flag around his neck, seemingly a signal that, you know, all the bad feelings are now over and we're friends again. But I do think that, you know, the role of the Saudis in this tournament going forward will probably say more and render a more definitive verdict on the future of sports washing than anything that really has to do with Qatar. Sometimes when I start talking about the Saudis, people will say to me, like, Tommy, you worked for Barack Obama. He met with the Saudis. The United States has had a relationship with the Saudis for years. The U.S. sold them tons of weapons during the Obama administration. That is all true. And there is some rank hypocrisy in what I'm saying. But what I want people to understand is that the current crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman, the bread and the Infantino sandwich, he's scary and he is different than past leaders. Like, again, I've mentioned Mohammed bin Salman ordering the execution of Jamal Khashoggi back in 2018 a couple times. I'll spare you all the gruesome details, but it's as bad as you think and worse. But, you know, MBS is what he's called for short, came to power in a brutal family power struggle. He locked up and tortured his own relatives. The Economist reported, Raj, that he once sprayed the ceiling with bullets during an argument with his own mother. Imagine you're fighting with your mom and you pull out your AK and you start ripping bullets into the ceiling. That seems a touch off. He launched this war in Yemen that has created humanitarian catastrophe. He sided with Russia by reducing oil production to keep prices high in the midst of the Ukraine war. And so that list just goes on. And, you know, as listeners to this podcast know, like, FIFA is an organization with a bit of a corruption problem. And in my opinion, MBS is a corruption dealer. He is willing and eager to try and buy off powerful people. He just cut a $2 billion check to Jared Kushner recently. He's steering money into Trump's hands by hosting these live golf tournaments at his clubs. They signed a licensing deal with Trump to buy some, you know, do some resort in Oman. And now we're seeing Gianni Infantino there sitting with MBS, sitting with the Emir, palling around with MBS at the G20. And I just feel like the Saudis have some momentum, which brings us to this very weird story, Raj, in The Athletic about Lionel Messi, the one true goat, as I've learned, and his role with the Saudi government. Can you help us? What the hell happened there, man?
So Lionel Messi is the single greatest player in my estimation. Say that for another podcast, a footballing podcast, say Men in Blazers. He and Ronaldo, it's like the LeBron and Michael Jordan of the modern game. I am definitely Team Messi. He's a remarkable little man. He looks like he's wandered out of Supercuts, but when he plays football, he runs with the ball as if it's stuffed inside his boot and no one can get it off him. It's his fifth World Cup. He's playing for Argentina. He's desperate to win a World Cup. Never done it. You really, in the eyes of the world, not for me, but in the eyes of the world, you need to have won a World Cup to be considered truly great. He's meant to go for it here. His team crapped the bed against Saudi Arabia. And the English journalist Barney Rene tweeted during the game, consolation for Messi, a great day for his second job as Saudi tourism ambassador. And yes, this is the thing. Lionel Messi, a footballer, but he has signed on to become an ambassador for the Saudi Tourist Board. He's been used thus far mostly to brand build. He's visited, he's sat on boats in scenic locations. He said how much he loves it there, how he can't wait to come back. And the Saudis are now reported to be about to make a bid to host the 2030 World Cup. It's a joint bid with Greece and Egypt, but it gets deliciously complicated here because Lionel Messi, Argentinian goat, Argentina is said to be poised to bid what for the 2030 World Cup, along with Uruguay, Chile, Paraguay. And so the notion of Argentina making a bid to host the World Cup and Lionel Messi, their greatest modern player of the 21st century, being the face of Saudi legitimacy. Tommy, it's just dystopian.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, and like, you know, his people will argue, oh, he's not actually advocating for the Saudi 2030 bid. He's just talking about this, like, he's a tourism sponsor. He's advocating on behalf of the Saudi Arabia Vision 2030 initiative, which basically is this, it's the brainchild of Mohammed bin Salman. It's his effort to diversify the Saudi economy away from oil and gas into something more sustainable and diversified as the world reduces its dependence on fossil fuels. But there's really no disassociating the two. And it is just bizarre. Like, I think I read that Lionel Messi made $120 million last year. I just don't know why you need, you know, the extra 25 million pounds for this Saudi deal. Apparently, Ronaldo turned down a much less generous offer, $5 million.
It's remarkable. Maybe Lionel Messi really just ultimately is a one-issue voter, and his issue is armbands. He's just really agitated about the future of armbands. Yeah, armbands. I just gotta draw the line. Armbands. And he's not alone. You know, David Beckham, Messiah. This is really quite something. A 10-year deal, $15 million a year, it's been reported, over 10 years, to be Qatar's brand ambassador. A role which right now, again, you say it's just. And David Beckham's role seems to be largely just involve him wandering around the spice market and declaring, it's one of the best spice markets I've ever been to. But, you know, English fans, for whom he's an icon, a legend, he is England incarnate. They're seething. The English media, they are shocked, and they keep saying, David, do you regret being made to be the face of Qatar? And he doesn't answer. And it's hard to watch because David Beckham has long stood for a carefully cultivated brand of good. He really has. Yeah. David Beckham has long been a gay icon. There's an English gay comedian, amazing guy, Joe Lissette.
So funny.
Google him. Yeah, I mean, how would you describe it? You've seen it. It's a video which has gone viral over that.
I think he threatened to throw 10,000 pounds into a wood chipper unless David Beckham renounced his Qatari brand ambassadorship. If Beckham did the right thing, he pledged to donate that money to LGBT charities.
Yeah, he did put $10,000 into the wood chipper. He's very clear to say 10,000 pounds. He was very clear to say that the money went in, but don't worry, I didn't, you know, wood chip £10,000. I gave it to LGBTQ charities. He had the incredible line, I consider, this is heartfelt, I consider you to be a gay icon. You're the first Premier League footballer to do shoots with gay magazines like Attitude, to speak openly about your gay fans. This is the great line. And you married a Spice Girl, which is the gayest thing a human can do. So these are the complexities. Yeah. The icon appropriation. And the motivations of humanity, which we don't always understand.
So listen, Roger, I do think we've probably exhausted the armband topic. We've done some negative
heavy
stories.
Heavy armband talk.
So we had the armband talk. There have been some pretty inspiring good stories. Should we maybe go to a couple of those before we end?
There have been. There's been moments, real moments of wonder. There's been real moments of real courage, to be candid.
Yeah.
I mean, we should say Iran qualified for this World Cup. It's been incredibly complicated, both for the protesters and for the players. But that's something that's inspired you, right?
Yeah, I mean, listen, there was this incredibly emotional and courageous moment where the Iranian national team refused to sing the Iranian national anthem in solidarity with protesters back home. And to the folks who don't know what's going on in Iran, basically since September, when a young Iranian woman named Mahsa Amini was brutally murdered by Iran's so-called morality police. There have been massive protests in the streets. And the morality police, they're nothing more than thugs who arrest and abuse Iranian citizens, usually women, for like not wearing a headscarf, but they will ruthlessly beat them. In some instances, have killed a number of people for not wearing like a headscarf or something. But the regime has cracked down brutally. They've responded with violence and brutality. Hundreds have been killed. Thousands have been arrested. But these Iranian players, they wanted to show solidarity. So they didn't sing along with the anthem. They also didn't celebrate goals as a show of solidarity. And like, again, Raj, this is where it gets so complicated, because I was reading a bunch of the coverage of this, and there were some Iranians back home who were inspired by what they did. There were some who were angry at them, at the players, for protesting at all. There were some who didn't think they went far enough. So again, it's just like, how much pressure can we put on these players to do the right thing when Gianni Infantino and these global leaders are showing no leadership?
The Iran thing is just so unbelievably complicated, and I can't imagine how emotional it must be for every single one of the football fans, many of whom are saying these footballers should not play, they should not represent the nation, they should not give a win to the governing power, and they're almost willing their team to lose and exit and have no ability for the government to have any kind of national moment of glory. And there's those who say this is a moment where they should be protesting. And when they do make their statements in the way that you've talked about, you know, the national anthem is a moment of incredible pride. To watch the Welsh team sing Land of Our Fathers, I'm not Welsh, watching their joy, I sobbed. Watching the Mexican team, the players sobbed. A number of the Mexican players started weeping while the national, it's an incredibly emotional moment. The Iranian national anthem played in the stadium for their first game, and every single human being on that field who was representing the nation just stood there silently, utterly stony-faced. It was a remarkable human moment. But again, many activists are saying it's not enough. They need to speak out. They need to speak out aggressively. You know, there's a counterpoint. Their families are still in Iran. They will be punished. This is a moment of deep complexity. And despite, I should say, you know, maybe the Qatari security forces were too obsessed with their rainbow crackdown. They did try and crack down on the Persian flags that many of the progressive Iranian fans who were there tried to smuggle into the stadium. It was incredible to witness the, again, incredibly brave individuals to be on camera globally holding up Persian flags, to be holding up flags with the statement, women, life, freedom. Every Iranian game is, at this point, nothing at all to do with the football. But there's been other moments. Denmark, the Danish national team, God bless you, Scandos. Again, we talked about this, I think, in episode 4, that the Danish team had decided with their kit manufacturer, Hummel, that they would take the field wearing specially created jerseys with muted crests, muted sponsor logos. They also have a third kit, which is totally black, which they wanted to be a symbol of mourning for those who died. And their sponsor, Hummel, released a statement saying, "We don't wish to be visible during a tournament that's cost thousands of people their lives." That has been remarkable to witness. It was a deeply effective moment, a deeply communicative moment, a messaging moment around the globe. And I'd say FIFA has stepped in micro ways on jerseys. FIFA are on it, on the jerseys. Belgium, Tommy, had the word love as a tiny detail on the inside of their collar on their second jersey. And FIFA stepped in at the last moment to ban that. FIFA, don't you think it's fitting, Tommy? FIFA, of course, anti-love.
That is actually, that is perfect. And especially like the absolute minutia they will get into to ensure that no one expresses themselves in any way possible is, it's remarkable. It's embarrassing.
This is where we are, as we're on day 4. And I do believe, Tommy, we will be podding again, please God, soon. I've got to, there's a stupid way to talk about football, but my God, you're the man who came up with the notion of an Infantino sandwich. Right? I think right now we're in a, again, you understand this stuff more than I do. I'm just a humble sports reporter, but I feel like we're in a Cold War stage of everything that's about to go down. And I've got a feeling, I've got a feeling it's about to escalate.
Yeah, I think you might be right. Raj, we gotta close by saying some nice words about our boys, the U.S. team. I went to a pub in Santa Monica with a buddy of mine, English pub. I ate fish and chips. I got to tell you, with all the, you know, the terrible stuff we've talked about in the series and with Qatar, it was such a beautiful thing to watch our team play well, to go nuts with a bunch of people. When Christian Pulisic passed that beautiful ball to the other guy whose name I don't know, and then he scored.
Tim Weah. His dad, by the way, Pod Save America. Tim Weah's dad, one of the greatest African footballers of all time, is currently the president of Liberia. So again, geopolitical fans of this podcast. Yes, Way.
What a story. That's so cool.
This is a lovely moment. George Weah, one of the greatest footballers of all time, now the president of Liberia, never played in a World Cup. Liberia never qualified. It made him ache to watch his son pull on a United States jersey, score a delicious goal, and he just retweeted out last night. It's actually really beautiful. And anyone who is a parent, Tommy, God bless you, Tommy Vito, and your beautiful partner. But anyone who is a parent, well, he just tweeted out this incredible footballer of his son. And it's hard to be the son of a true great. It's a hard to be the son of a true great. He just tweeted, last night, he tweeted proud papa, a photo of the two of them. It's a magnificent moment. But I am digressing. You're saying you watched the game, you're in the pub.
No, I loved it. To be in a pub with a bunch of people going nuts for your country is the best feeling in the world, you know? And we won't talk about what happened in, I think, the 82nd minute when the Welsh team scored. But we look good for a while. Christian Pulisic looked good for about 70 minutes. We got to keep him healthy on the field going. But I don't know. I'm excited for the game Friday.
Are we ending on a football league? Is that what you're asking me? Let's end this thing on let's bring it back to happiness. And I'll say, just for listeners who may be confused at this moment because of my English accent, do not let my accent fool you. I ride with Team America now in every way, like Kenny Powers, like Bruce Springsteen, like Dolly Parton. I'm 100% behind this United States team. I mean, I love them. I adore them. I love the growth of the game here on the men's and women's side. It's the story of my lifetime. And I love these young guys. I know a lot of them very, very well. They're a very talented, very young, they are the most talented as a group of individuals on the men's side, because our women are world beaters, but on the men's side, they're the most talented group of young individuals our nation's ever created. And I can tell you, they're so young, they don't know how to be afraid. They truly are fearless. And we play England on Friday. It's a massive game for the team, for the optics of progress in terms of the growth of the game on the men's side. And I'm filled with excitement. I mean, I adore this team. I am cheering for them. I'll be watching on Twitch with McConaughey, cheering on for the United States boys just as loudly as he will. And ultimately, this is the one piece of life truth that I will give you. People want to know why. It's a complicated answer. I actually wrote a piece for the Wall Street Journal about why. But it boils down to this. Tommy, one simple rule in life. If Piers Morgan is on one side of an argument...
Yes.
Always choose the other, right?
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. God, I love that. What a rule. What a way to live. World Corrupt is an original podcast collaboration from Men in Blazers and Crooked Media's Pod Save the World. Alongside Roger Bennett, I'm your host, Tommy Vitor.
The executive producers and writers of World Corrupt are me, Roger Bennett, my great friend, Tommy Vitor, and Men in Blazers, Jonathan Williamson, who incredibly edited and sound designed the episodes. A bit like Phil Collins drumming and singing at the very same time.
He's a talented man. From the Crooked Media side, our executive producers are Michael Martinez, Sandy Girard, and Giancarlo Bizarro. Our producers are Ryan Wallerston and Haley Muse. And our associate producer is Saul Rubin.
For Men in Blazers, our producers, Miranda Davis and Martin S.
This episode was fact-checked by Nikki Shaner Bradford, music by Vasilis Fotopoulos.
With editing assistance from Nick Furshall.
Additional production support from Crooked Media's Zuri Irvin, Kyle Seglin, and Ari Schwartz.
And Men in Blazers, Max Diskerud.
Special thanks to Crooked Media's Julia Beach, Amelia Montooth, and Matt DeGroote.
As well as Men in Blazers, Scott Debson, Michael Milberger, and Alex Sale for their promotional, social support, and love.